9. Heart of Darkness. A few days before my next call with McAfee, I watched the documentary entitled Gringo, The Dangerous Life of John McAfee on Netflix, and I have to confess that I found it to be confusing viewing. It's not for me to say what the filmmakers' motives were, but the conclusion I reached after watching the film was that they wanted to present McAfee not just as a deranged murderer, but also as a calculating rapist. By any standards, these were very serious allegations that, although unsubstantiated, nevertheless made me feel quite uncomfortable about my relationship with him, even though there was a degree of mutual trust and everything seemed genuine. But what made things even more difficult was that some of the testimonies in the film were from people that McAfee had and would reference again, people who were dear to him. To that extent, rumors that some of these people had been bribed by the filmmakers to say certain things for the purposes of the documentary's revelatory angle seemed plausible. Belize was, after all, a pretty lawless place by all accounts, where money was tight for many and bribes were commonplace. Certain things about the documentary just didn't add up, though. Equally, I was perfectly willing to go into our conversations about what happened down in Belize, expecting that McAfee's version of events might not add up either. I was objective enough about it all to know that, in circumstances whereby saying something might put him in serious trouble, McAfee might well omit certain information or flat-out lie. I was on guard for any change in tone or mannerisms that might suggest we were entering into touchy territory. Me. How does a person start living in a country like Belize? John McAfee. I went online in early 2007, looked at all the houses for sale, picked one, called the realtor, and sent the money. I never set foot in the house before buying it. It was a risk, just like anything else. Me, as someone who pays so much attention to detail when building houses, it seems strange to just buy a place blind off the internet. John McAfee. I didn't want to spend a week down there with fucking realtors being shown around. Later that year, when we went down there for the first time, Jennifer loved the place. I double loved the place. The house was perfect. A pod design with a central area with the living room, dining room and kitchen in the middle. This was a massive area with windows on all sides, right on the beach on the southern end of Ambergris Key. There were various other bedrooms, all in effect separate houses situated close by but connected to the main building by covered walkways. From every front room you could see the beach and the reef a quarter of a mile offshore. Me. So when did you go down to live in Belize full-time? John McAfee. Nothing for me is ever completely full-time, but for the purposes of the question, let's say I was in Belize for most of my time from about 2008 onwards until I had to leave in 2012. When I got down there with Jennifer, I did what I normally did somewhere new. I assembled my toys, the specific items I'd need to make life fun in the new environment I was going into. In Santa Cruz, it was cars. In Colorado, off-road vehicles, etc. In Belize, given that everything revolved around the ocean and fishing, I was going to need a good boat. So I had a 32-foot boat made for me by Bradley Boat Works, which was basically just one man. Two engines on the back, very fast. It was a lot of fun. And then I bought a 44-foot catamaran, a workboat for the staff to use to get to town, and a couple of jet skis. Me. It has been rumored widely that you lost all your money in the 2008 financial crisis. Is there any truth in that? John McAfee. The market crash never impacted my finances. I was always an extremely conservative investor. Morgan Stanley were my money managers, and my orders were pretty much the same all the time. I didn't want 10%, I didn't even want 5%. My attitude was, I want 1%, but just don't lose my fucking money. And they didn't. I was in AAA-rated bonds throughout the whole stock market crash. Me, where exactly was your house in Belize? John McAfee, the town of San Pedro, where my beach house was located, was touristy, white, and populated mostly by wealthy Americans, many of whom came down for vacations or to spend 6 months of the year, etc. To that extent, I fit in just fine there. People liked me. I quickly became part of the community, and Jennifer soon opened and was running a nice little coffee shop called the Sail Away Cafe, which quickly became one of San Pedro's most frequented landmarks. Me, was there any specific agenda down there, or did you see this as retirement? John McAfee. I honestly hadn't even thought about it. I was just going with the flow, kicking back, and for the first couple of years I just sailed around on my boat, went to the outer islands, explored the reef, and generally had a fine time in what was essentially paradise. Then that got boring, and at that point I started looking around for shit to do. Me. Before you explain what that entailed, can you give me a sense of what Belize is like? John McAfee. The natives are primarily black, and the primary language is English, albeit not everyone speaks it very well. The real language is Belizean Creole, which is a simplification of English, and then thereafter Spanish is the second language. The country was formerly British Honduras until the colonialists left in 1981, in turn leaving the country in the hands of a largely uneducated people. You can, therefore, probably imagine what kind of governments were going to spring up. By the time I showed up down there, the Belizean Prime Minister, Dean Barrow, had not only had the country's military at his command, but also his own private army on call, the Gang Suppression Unit, he called it, most of whom were little more than street thugs. Meanwhile, among the general population, there was palpable and festering anger from hundreds of years of British rule. There was genuine racial hatred in the air at all times, and I knew all that from very early on in my time in Belize. Me, what shit did you find to do? John McAfee. The first thing I do when I get to a new place is look around and see what's missing. To that end, after a couple of months, I noticed that the ferry system that serviced the island, island ferries, really wasn't very efficient. They had a few open boats that held 50 or so people, and these ferries moved people up and down the coast of San Pedro, which was about 40 miles from one end to the other. There were schedules for when and where they were supposed to pick people up, and one of the stops was the dock of my house. Well, these boats were routinely showing up an hour late. Not just that, they only ran four boats per day. So I started my own ferry company called Coastal Express and bought a fleet of high-capacity boats and painted them red. We ran every half hour. When our schedule said we'd be at a certain dock at 2:15 p.m, we were there. Me. Why did you do this? John McAfee. Good question. It wasn't for the money, that's for fucking sure. No white man was ever going to make any money in Belize, but they didn't mind people building shit, especially if it benefited local people. And I guess, from my side, you could say that I was just being benevolent in a subconscious attempt to ingratiate myself with the locals. As if to prove it, I hired only local people, unlike every other business in San Pedro, who only ever employed white people, which I always thought was so fucking stupid. Me. On paper, you were simply improving things by investing in the town where you were living. John McAfee. I was, but within 2 months I'd put Island Ferries out of business in spectacular fashion. I ended up buying them out, gave the guy a good price too, taking their boats and painting them all red. In no time at all, I had created an efficient ferry company that not only serviced the island properly, but also gave the locals jobs. What could possibly go fucking wrong? Me. What did go wrong? John McAfee. Well, let's see. One of my boats killed a tourist by running over this guy at night, at least 100 yards from shore. Who the fuck swims at night, that far from shore? Nevertheless, that happened, drew lawsuits, and caused all kinds of friction. Someone else got their leg amputated by a propeller during the day while they were snorkeling. They came up underneath the boat, apparently. Then there were all kinds of personnel issues to contend with. People not showing up, people fighting or being drunk. Finally, I hired a friend, Eddie Ancona, to run the whole thing on my behalf. I just couldn't deal with the nuances of Belizean pecking orders, etc. After a bit longer, when the business needed for nothing, I washed my hands of it altogether and signed the whole thing over to the workers collectively as a gift. It's still running now. If you go to Belize, the Coastal Express water taxis are still going up and down the coast, probably on the same schedules. Me. Do you think that as much as you were improving the infrastructure, there was resistance to you from the government? Were they thinking, who does this guy think he is? John McAfee. In San Pedro, nobody gave a shit. They just wanted a ferry. And I forgot to say that locals paid half the price that tourists did. Also, I instituted a policy whereby all school children rode for free during the school year. I never made a dime from any Belizean business while I was there, nor did I ever anticipate making one. The locals were fine with it, but I don't think the government and its associated thugs up in Belize City liked what I was doing at all, as I'd soon find out. Everything was fine. For a couple of years, I was this happy-go-lucky dude. We could easily have stayed there and lived a quiet life by the beach and still been there now. But San Pedro, for all its beach appeal, wasn't the real Belize, and I've always been searching for real. I've been seeking it my whole life, one way or another. But to find it in Belize, I had to head inland to a foreboding interior area called Orange Walk, whose main centre of population, Orange Walk Town, lies at the northern end of the district. Me: what did you want to do there? John McAfee: I suppose, as mad as it sounds, I thought I could build a jungle house by the New River and live in harmony with the natives, all of whom were black and many of whom shared their government's fundamental mistrust of wealthy white men like me. Part of me, I suppose, also wanted to test myself in a raw, untamed environment that exposed humanity in a way that a sanitized, white beach resort just couldn't. Me: given what had happened in Hawaii, was this a wise policy? John McAfee: probably not. And when I talked to my best Belizean friend, Eddie Ancona, a carpenter I'd hired shortly after arriving in Belize to change the woodwork in the beach house in San Pedro, he said, that's really not a good idea. I trusted Eddie, and Jennifer and I became friendly with him and his wife, who were both fundamental Christians. Eddie worked on my beach house for over a year. In addition to changing the woodwork, he also fitted wall-to-wall bookcases. He was a really skilled and diligent craftsman who never once wore shoes, and what I gave him was probably a job of a lifetime from a financial perspective. But of course I didn't fucking listen to Eddie. No, I was stupid enough and arrogant enough to think that somehow I could make such a ludicrous situation work. So we flew over there, Jennifer, Eddie and me. This must have been sometime in 2010, shortly after I took a boat trip up the Jungle River and found myself spellbound by the sheer rawness of the environment and the Mayan ruins that lay hidden in the jungle's darkest corners. Anyway, we found this property on 2 acres beside the New River on a low-lying piece of ground that looked as if it needed to be raised to avoid being flooded when the New River ran high in periods of heavy rain. I was sold on this place. Jennifer was not. While we were in Orange Walk, Eddie introduced me to all the main players, including, whoa, do I have to talk about this? Me: including whom? John McAfee: I'm not sure how wise it is for me to name names like this. Me: why not? John McAfee: these are dangerous people. We may need to review this later. Anyway, the man I was going to mention was Rodwell Richards, who everybody knew was the most feared hitman in Central America. He had a staff that consisted of ex-Belizean Defense Force psychos, and he just took hit jobs on behalf of mostly the Prime Minister, Dean Barrow, and sometimes for other cabinet ministers. Eddie introduced me to all the major players who would assist with transforming my life in Belize from being laid back and keeping myself to myself to being a man in constant conflict with a violent entity who insisted that I toe the line at all times. Me: it sounds like you brought all this on yourself. You were warned, but you ignored that warning. John McAfee: Eddie did warn me, but he was never forceful about it. He just said, you're going to need security, which I knew. But it wouldn't have mattered what he said at that point. I had made my mind up I was going to the jungle, and nobody could persuade me otherwise. I bought the land we'd seen on the initial foray into the jungle, and on my next trip there, I went up to the nearest township to seek out people to work on building the house and the various other cottages that I wanted on the land. As I walked through the streets on my way to meet the local natives, known as Mennonites, who I was going to employ to do the construction, all I heard was, "Hey, white man!" being shouted from windows as I walked by. Me: you were just reenacting Heart of Darkness, weren't you? John McAfee: nonsense, this wasn't Heart of Darkness at all. That was a novel about a psychosis that turned dark. This was just me in the jungle, with a bunch of locals who were initially very friendly. You have to see and come into contact with something before you can truly hate it, right? Yes, they had seen white people. There were tourist boat trips now and again up the New River from Orange Walk Town to the Mayan ruins I mentioned at Lamanai. But they had never seen a white person in the circumstances under which I was showing up. Walking into the jungle and building a house among them, or walking into Pursa Novella's strip club, Lover's Bar, to sit at night and watch the girls dance, or showing up at the local market at dawn on a Sunday morning to see if I could get some fresh fucking tomatoes, or at the local food court where the poor ate because you could get a good meal for next to nothing. No white person had ever done any of these things, but I did. Pretty soon, after the initial shock and novelty had worn off, they realized I was just a harmless old man who was fundamentally nice and generous. I started wandering into Orange Walk to fraternize with the locals, especially the women. Me: ah, yes, inevitably there were women involved. John McAfee: You should know this by now. However, in order to understand the women I was involved with in Belize, you first have to understand Mr. Pasus Novella. He owned and ran a club called Lover's Bar in Orange Walk Town, which was basically a front for prostitution, which, by the way, is perfectly legal and accepted in Belize. Pasus was my friend and simultaneously my enemy. In his capacity as second cousin to Gaspar Vega, the assistant prime minister at the time, Paz tried to have me collected and killed as many times as anybody. At the beginning, however, when I first arrived in the jungle, I had said to my assistant, "Where are all the women?" "Lovers," he told me. I went to Lovers one afternoon and bought everyone a beer, including the Mennonites, who weren't even supposed to drink and fuck women, but did anyway. I didn't even talk to anyone. Then, the next day, I did the same thing. I bought everybody a beer. By this point, girls were trying to climb on me. Me. "What was your angle by doing this?" John McAfee. "I was just paying close fucking attention because I wanted to identify these women and their characteristics. And very quickly, I identified the ones who would both steal your wallet and slash your throat so that you couldn't tell anybody. There were certainly a few of those. After a while, I had identified four who I thought were 99% trustworthy and who were smart enough to realize that by being nice to me, they'd get a lot more money than they would by stealing whatever was in my pocket that day. The first one I met was Tamisha. She was the first girl I took back to my house on the river. She was the first Belizean girl I ever talked to properly." Me. "What happened to Jennifer?" John McAfee. "Much like every woman who has ever gone anywhere with me, Jennifer eventually left and went back to the US. And she did this because she finally realized that the reason I was staying away so much in the jungle was that I was seeing many other women all the time. However, Tamisha's story was tragic. She was a prostitute, maybe 20 years old. She had a daughter, but the daughter's father took her, legally, when she was a baby, and Tamisha was only allowed to see her under supervision. But the father had a girlfriend who was seriously fucking whacked, and she would do things like burn the kid with a fucking iron to the point that she had iron-shaped blisters on her back. She was in this terrible situation. Tamisha knew her daughter was being abused, but because she was in a cycle of prostitution, she couldn't get her back. Her whole psyche was damaged, so I took her in to try and help. The other girl I started seeing in the earlier days was Amy. These two girls and some others were living with me. We'd go places together, to resorts in the area and even further afield to Mexico, which turned a few heads given I was this smartly dressed, sun-tanned older white guy with young black girls in tow, often in various states of inappropriate dress. People had never seen that before. Of course, I was having sex with them all, which was freaky for everybody in retrospect. This is just how it was. I was just doing what I always did. For a while, everything was fine. These women came to me, and they all came via Pasus. I bought their freedom from him with cash, but in turn they became dependent on me, which was arguably worse. Me? So what changed? John McAfee. A couple of things in combination. In 2009, my old college in Roanoke had decided to give me an honorary doctorate. A year or two so later, after I'd moved to the jungle, somebody in Orange Walk Town must have got hold of an old newspaper article that described me as Dr. McAfee, and the next thing I know, everybody in Orange Walk is saying, "Oh, so he's a doctor." That was the first problem. Me? In what sense was it a problem? John McAfee. Well, not only did they have a white man in the sprawling compound I'd built in their midst, but this white man was also a doctor. Mothers started showing up at my front gate. "Can I talk to Dr. McAfee?" they'd say to my security guards. Out of courtesy, I'd always go down and talk, and the first one who arrived had a baby with her who was clearly starving. The belly was swollen, the skin was blotched, and the hair was falling out. This infant couldn't have been more than 15 months old. "Dr. McAfee, can you tell me what's wrong with my child?" she said. "Well, I'm not really that kind of doctor, I'm afraid." By this point, I told Amy, who was living with me, to go down to the store and buy this woman some beans, rice, meats and vegetables, and then to unload these provisions at her home. Well, thereafter, an endless stream of women started appearing at my gate. Eventually, I decided to go into the local village, a place called Carmelita. When I got there, I was shocked by what I saw. I had never seen such poverty. People were living in broken-down cinder-block shacks with no roof. Kids were starving everywhere. So I met with the village elders. They had a school there, but the kids didn't get lunch at school. If lunch had been available, all the adults would have been there too. So to cut a long story short, I built a school cafeteria and developed a lunch program that provided food, a refrigerated kitchen, etc., not just for the kids in Carmelita, but also for everyone from the surrounding villages to come there. Although they invariably came to me for other things, mothers at least stopped bringing their starving kids to my gate. On balance, I thought I'd solved a major local problem, but it was a real embarrassment for the government. Me? What was the problem? You had the means to help, and you did. John McAfee. That's how you and I might see it, but that's not how they saw it. People had been starving forever in Orange Walk, and the government had never fixed the problem. Then a white man comes in, and all the food problems are solved. Had I been black, it still might have been a mild affront to the government, but I was white, and the government, as I said, did not like white people. Prime Minister Dean Barrow must have been thinking, what's a white man doing feeding my people? That was the last straw. Wait, actually, it wasn't quite the final last straw. Me? What was? John McAfee, let me start by saying that the entirety of the government was corrupt. I'll begin with the least dangerous names and work upwards. The Minister of National Defence was the biggest drug dealer in the country. The Minister for Immigration was the largest human trafficker in all of Central America. The Minister of Finance filled his pockets by selling Belizean passports to Muslims who wanted to access America via Mexico. They could get right to the border on a Belizean passport, and a good proportion would get escorted across in the absence of the wall that I'm glad President Trump has not yet built. For the record, I hope he never does. The Assistant Prime Minister, the second most powerful man in Belize, and a more brutal man than the Prime Minister, ran all the drugs in Orange Walk. His name was Gaspar Vega, and he lived in Orange Walk Town, which was 7 miles from where I was living. Me. I'm assuming that he was uncomfortable with your presence. John McAfee. Not only that, because of my relationships with the various girls who were coming and going from the compound, I also had started to get an understanding that almost all of Orange Walk's social problems were a result of the drug gangs that Gaspar Vega was in cahoots with. I decided I wanted to clean that shit up for the good of the local people. Because of my relationships with these young girls, I was now invested in a way Mr. Vega didn't want me to be. Me. Surely you must have felt impending doom. You were about to do exactly what you would have done in Molokai, only in an arguably much more dangerous place. John McAfee. This is all true. A few things were going on at the time, not least that Amy, one of the girls who was living with me at that time, was starting to get extremely unpredictable. If you go online and find the Dateline NBC documentary called Trouble in Paradise about my time in Belize, you will see her on there, calmly admitting that she tried to kill me. She's quite a performer, believe you me. Me, why did she want to kill you? John McAfee, jealousy mostly. When you're a rich, hospitable man living in a house with a bunch of young, poor women, that's going to happen. On one occasion, she tried to slash my throat with a straight razor. I'd never had one of those against my throat before, and she did this because she said that I had flirted with a Spanish lady at the food court in Orange Walk Town. I didn't even remember seeing a Spanish lady at the food court worth looking at, but whatever. Anyway, she had this blade against my throat, and I could feel the blood starting to run down my neck. In that moment, I thought, this is a fucking serious situation. I could feel the incredible slicing power of that straight blade, and I couldn't move away in either direction without getting cut wide open. I genuinely thought that she was going to kill me right there and then. Me, what did you do? John McAfee, I leaned back against the wall, put my hands up in the air, and calmly said, do it, Amy. Just like that, and she looked at me for a second and started laughing out loud, saying, you are special. On another occasion, she tried to kill me with rat poison, but knowing what rat poison smells like, I was wise to that. Then the next time she tried to shoot me while I was sleeping and ended up blowing out my left eardrum. I'm still deaf in that ear today. For that, I made her go to her cabin on the property for a month without television. She screamed for days. I didn't even shoot you. It's not fair without television. It was just a punishment, and I thought it was fair. She could have left and gone home if she didn't like it. I was never forcing anyone to stay with me. However, it got to the point where I just couldn't trust her anymore. I certainly couldn't have her living with me when she was so unpredictable. I said to her, Amy, you know I love you, but you're going to kill me one day. Me? Did you kick her out? John McAfee, not quite. I agreed to build her a house in Carmelita instead and to pay for all her food and expenses thereafter. It sounds crazy when I say that now, but at the time, the idea made total sense because she loved it there and her family was from there. We went to Carmelita, found her a piece of property that she liked, and started building the house. Just before the thatched roof place was complete, there was a fatal shooting outside it in the street right outside her house. I had no idea what was going on, but when I started inquiring, I found out that Carmelita specifically was the centre for all of the drug activities in Orange Walk District. I started paying attention, and gradually I started piecing together who all the main drug dealers were and where the lots from which they sold drugs were located in the village. I didn't like that. Me, what did you do about it? John McAfee. I shut the whole operation down by force. I didn't specifically hurt anyone, but when I say force, I'll tell you what I mean. I went to my friend Eddie Ancona and said, Eddie, we've got a problem. There's a huge drug problem in Carmelita. Amy's going to be living there. There are shootings outside her house, and I can't tolerate that. He said, okay, I'm going to introduce you to somebody. And the person he introduced me to was the guy I mentioned earlier, Rodwell Richards, the most feared hitman in Central America. Me? Describe this man for me. John McAfee. Big, black, and very rough. My current wife, Janice, met him once when he came to San Francisco after I'd left Belize. He was an ex-police captain of such brutality that he was always on the precipice of being fired. His claim to fame had been that, when he was still with the police force, the previous Prime Minister, Said Musa, tasked him with shutting down the Los Zetas cartels' activity in Belize. They'd been coming across the border from Mexico and doing whatever they wanted. Whenever they were arrested, someone would pay off the judges, and the judges would let them off. Rodwell Richards single-handedly put a stop to the Los Zetas infiltration. Within 6 months of him being hired to do the job, every Zeta who entered Belize was either found dead in Belize somewhere or was shot while trying to escape. After he left the police, he started up on his own with this band of 30 or so vicious thugs, doing exclusively private contracts and whacking people. He was a heavy dude. Everybody in Central America knew the name Rodwell Richards. And now, sometime in 2010, here he was, standing in front of me. I told him what the problem was and said, what can I do about these drug dealers? To which he replied, well, I can remove them all. What does that mean? I asked. It means remove, he said. Oh no, you misunderstand. That's not what I want. Can't you just threaten them or something? Rodwell stared at me with the coldest imaginable eyes I'll never forget and said, I don't threaten. I do. Holy shit. I knew I was now in dangerous territory, but I also knew that he was in business to make money. So I told him that I was offering him a lot of money to do whatever it took to scare these drug dealers away. I'll think about it, he said. The next day he called me back and said, I'll do it. Shortly followed by the words, stay out of Carmelita, which I did. Me, having paid him, what did you think he was going to do? John McAfee. I didn't see what he did with my own eyes, but I heard enough from other people to understand what went down. Rodwell Richards knew exactly where every goddamn drug dealer in Carmelita lived. So in a convoy of cars with his helpers, he showed up at each house with body bags. He put a body bag on the ground outside each house, knocked on the door and said, this body bag has your name on it. I'm going to come back at noon. If you're still here, you're going to be in this bag just after noon. And sure enough, by noon, every drug dealer in Carmelita and the surrounding area was fucking gone. They knew that Rodwell Richards didn't bluff anyone. They have not come back to this day. Me, you had to feel good about how it had all happened, yes? John McAfee, initially I thought I've just cleaned up Carmelita. And that was a very good thing. And then I realized that it really wasn't such a good thing because the Assistant Prime Minister, Gaspar Vega, in his capacity as the head of drug dealing in the whole fucking district, was the guy who stood to lose most from what I'd just done. While the Minister of National Defense at the time was doing various deals with the cartels that allowed them to travel freely across the border with Mexico, Gaspar Vega was selling drugs, drugs that he probably acquired from the Minister of National Defense directly to the people of Orange Walk. Overnight, I had killed 50% of his business. That, my friend, was the final straw for me in Belize. Where did the antibiotics research you got into in Belize fit into all of this? John McAfee. This was happening around the same time, and it all combined to bring about a set of terrible circumstances. The venture started after I went down to the southern resorts to look at a smaller private island that someone told me was for sale and I might like. The southern resorts were nowhere near as nice as the San Pedro resorts in the north. In the north, the reef was close to the beach, and the waters on the beach were always dead calm, regardless of what nightmares were happening out beyond the reef. In the south, that reef was miles offshore. Consequently, the waters in the south were always rougher, with big waves continually pounding the shore. So we get to this private island, me, Amy, and a couple of the other girls, and as nice as it was, it looked like it was ready to get washed away at any second by the waves that were continually washing up all around, almost right up to the structures themselves. While we were there was a girl there in a restaurant playing guitar and singing love songs. Her name was Alison Andonizio, and as it turned out, she was a PhD student from some university in Florida, and her area of speciality was something called quorum sensing. She was taking a break from her studies and was considering using Belize as a location to source rare plants for her studies. Me? Briefly, what is quorum sensing? John McAfee. Scientists discovered a dozen or so years ago that bacteria actually communicate, and they do so chemically. Whenever bacteria get into a specific environment, it produces a chemical for that specific environment, the acidic environment in the stomach or just under the skin or inside your nose, etc. As they start to replicate, they produce substances almost like pheromones. At the same time, they have receptors that detect other pheromones. The quorum is reached when there are enough bacteria to form what's called a biomass, a level at which bacteria can do actual damage to the body. However, some plants are capable of silencing that quorum, in effect deafening bacteria to the presence of these other pheromones. The bacteria therefore never become pathogenic, and the body can remove them without being handicapped. Me, so you employed her right there and then? John McAfee. Pretty much. I agreed that she'd come to my compound, where I would set her up with all the necessary research equipment in one of the buildings that was basically sitting empty. I then bought centrifuges, microscopes, and sensing gear. You name it, I got it. She came to live at the compound to do her research, and I agreed to pay her a trivial salary. Me? Did you actually achieve anything with this research? John McAfee. Yes, we did. We found a couple of plants, both of them very strange and hard to find, that achieved this quorum sensing effect. We were really onto something, to the extent that we had enough to create 15,000 vials of a topical spray that could be applied to the skin. Sadly, most people in jungle environments died because of what seemed like trivial infections. But this concoction of ours worked so well on the cases that we trialed that people from the villages were literally trying to break our door down to get their hands on it. I truly believed that this was going to be one of the greatest breakthroughs since the invention of penicillin. So why didn't that happen? John McAfee. Well, the Prime Minister, at Mr. Vega's request, I assume, sent his gang suppression unit, led by Marco Vidal, to my house and raided the place, not that I was even a gang, claiming that they'd been tipped off that we were actually manufacturing methamphetamine, not antibiotics or antiseptics. They knew we weren't doing that. They found no such thing in the search. They just wanted an excuse to control me, and once they'd trashed the compound and removed all our records, etc., they threw me in jail on a bogus firearms charge because they said that I didn't have a license for one of the many guns I had on the property at the time. Me, did this raid come totally out of the blue? John McAfee. Ever since I'd cleaned up Carmelita, I suspected it might go this way. Feeling threatened by what the government might try to do, I had been gradually beefing up my security. The house had become an armed fortress of sorts, but I was only defending myself, my staff, and my property from what I knew was an imminent threat. To be fair, a week before the raid, a sort of peace offering was made. A senior figure in the UDP, one of Belize's two main political parties, came around. There was an election just around the corner. Mr. McAfee, he said, I know we've had some problems, and we'd like to resolve them. We thought that if you would simply donate $2 million to our campaign, this could all be cleared up. You know what? I don't think so, I replied. That was a mistake. The day after the raid, after I'd been released from jail with no charge, that same gentleman came back to see me and said, We are so sorry. We were acting on a tip that was totally false. Can you forgive us? And by the way, Mr. McAfee, have you now reconsidered that donation? Stupidly, I declined the offer again. And I did so because I'd been abused, been thrown in jail, had one of my dogs shot, and had $500,000 of my property destroyed. I was tired, confused, and raging at everyone at this point. Get the fuck off my property, I said, which was a very stupid thing to say under the circumstances. I then left Orange Walk forever, knowing I could never return to the jungle. Additionally, I did something that nobody in Belize would have expected. I took my army of security guards, most of whom were wild-eyed ex-cons, back to San Pedro with me, along with a growing troop of young local girls. What was the significance of the guy from Wired, Joshua Davis, visiting you in 2012? John McAfee. That whole thing was of no importance to me at all. I told you, he was naive. I completely messed with him with a gun that he thought was loaded, and by doing so, I was making a point. We can have a perception of something, but if a single piece of information is missed or ignored, that perception then becomes very different from reality. So the only person Josh Davis's interview was important to was Josh Davis, because he later wrote that book about me based just on a 2-week period. A 2-week period that meant nothing in the overall scheme of things. What happened to Alison Andonisio, who later accused you of rape in Nanette Burstein and Jeff Wise's movie, Gringo, The Dangerous Life of John McAfee? John McAfee? That's a complicated story, but let me explain. At the time when the Jungle Lab was making what I thought were exciting discoveries, I was simultaneously promoting the lab's work by having stories run by various science magazines back in the US. Jeff Wise, a journalist who'd done a story on me a few years earlier when I was pursuing the sport flying venture, came down to Belize in 2012 to write a story about the work we were doing with quorum sensing. Meanwhile, Alison turned out to be absolutely stark raving fucking crazy, at least as far as I could see. Nevertheless, when she worked, which was not that frequently because she spent most of her time partying with the local boys in the jungle, she did a good job. Anyway, Jeff Wise came down in the middle of all this. He's a good-looking guy, and on the first night it seemed to me that he and Alison got on very well, and that close friendship continued for the week he was there. Jeff then went back, wrote an okay story, and then Alison and I reached a point where we couldn't work together anymore. On my side, there was no animosity whatsoever. I'd have probably carried on by myself or found something else interesting to do. However, she demanded half of the assets. I told her she was deluded. I'd paid for all the equipment, and the lab was on my property. She left in a rage and went back to the US, and at some point she must have got together with Jeff Weiss again, and between them, they must have decided that they just had to make a let's-rip-this-guy-apart type of movie. That's all that matters about the story, but her accusations about me are absurd. I had a sense that Jeff Wise might have been in discussion with the Belizean authorities, specifically Marco Vidal, the leader of the gang suppression unit. Because they had little access to high-level press in the US, my suspicion was that the Belizean authorities had tipped Jeff off by saying, "There's a scoop coming." 2 days later, my compound was raided and I was thrown in jail. But after some life-saving legal help from my ex-business manager Maria, who I mentioned before, I was released with no charge, all of which completely threw a spanner in the works of what I saw as being Jeff Weiss's and the Belizean authorities' little plan. The day after I was released, Jeff Wise didn't even call me. He just flew home and continued writing bizarre stories about me from the safety of the US. Meanwhile, after getting let go with no charge, I then returned to San Pedro. That was the beginning of the end of real war with Belize. Me. Did you have any direct contact with Nanette Burstein? John McAfee. I'm not sure at what point Jeff and Alison connected with Nanette. All I knew was that they were shopping this idea for a movie around. When they found Nanette, given that all I personally see her as is a shit-stirrer who likes nothing more than to distort fiction into her version of fact, she was always going to be perfect for a movie like the one they had in mind. However, I didn't actually know there was even going to be a movie until I was on my presidential campaign trail in 2016 and people said, "Did you know that Showtime is in town filming something about you?" I wasn't concerned and refused to be interviewed on camera by her. I have, however, had many spirited email exchanges with Nanette, in which I've given her none of the information that she wanted. That's all there is to say about that movie and the people involved in it. Me, Was there any part of you that thought that was the time you should have just left Belize? John McAfee, no, not one single part of me. Belize was my fucking home. I'd invested a lot of time and energy into my life there. I had ongoing love affairs and legal residency. I failed to see why I should have been intimidated, especially by politicians. I had every right to take security and weapons back to San Pedro. I was in a country where everybody hated me. I had a right to defend myself. But overnight, this tourist beach village, where the locals sucked the tourists they hated so much dry of money, changed radically. It went from this idyllic place of calm ocean and sandy beaches to a place where you walked down the shore past a house that was fortified by black-shirted armed guards on every corner of the property and large, snarling guard dogs straining at leashes. People didn't like it. I didn't give a shit. I was determined to do things differently. You just can't have people with guns on the beach, people who owned nearby businesses said. Show me the law that says I can't, was my reply. These people had no idea what I'd experienced in the jungle. I wasn't going to let it happen again. I was digging on for the fight. Me, I've read that there were many girls with you in this beach house. John McAfee, that is true. There were 8 of them by this point, one of which, Samantha, is an important part of the story going forward. Each of them had their own separate bedrooms on the property. Each of them took turns cooking. The press made out that this was an idyllic, hedonistic existence I was living in San Pedro at this point, but the reality was anything but idyllic. It was tense. I was in a permanent state of high alert and continually on the lookout for threats or a hint of betrayal from the various people who I was employing, none of whom I felt I could truly trust. As it turned out, I had every reason to feel that way. At least 2 of the girls were being pressurized by local gang members to extort me or frame me. My staff had to be completely swapped out on more than one occasion because I suspected them of colluding with the authorities. Meanwhile, I slept in my bed in that house, literally with one eye open and with a loaded shotgun pointed at the bedroom door, while the Coast Guard ship cruised up and down the coast all night long, pausing only to shine the spotlight directly at the windows of my house. Me, which gangs were involved in threatening you? John McAfee? I didn't know this at the time, but I found out later that Samantha had been taking money from all sorts of gangs. I also found out that it was she who had tipped off the police for the raid on my property in the jungle. She'd been living in the jungle compound at the time. She was even working in the lab. She was the inside girl and was paid a certain amount of money to turn. When she saw the shit that went down, when I went back to San Pedro, I think she felt some remorse for a while. But when she saw the women count going up, she got pissed again and contacted these 2 gangs to ask if they could help her get my money or whatever. She was acting on jealousy, with retrospect, but at some point I was sent a written note telling me to deposit a large sum of money under a bridge between the North and South Island, or else people would come to San Pedro and kill me and all my guards. I had no idea who sent this note. At the time, I thought it could have been a government setup, or stupid kids, or one of 2 gangs I knew Samantha had links with. Whoever sent the note, I knew it was a serious threat. The White Lobster Gang was one such gang. White Lobster was the name given to packages of cocaine that washed in on Belize's beaches. Passing cartel boats from Colombia that were going up and down the coast either dumped this stuff in high-speed chases, or their boats broke up in bad weather. Either way, tons of cocaine washed up on Belize's beaches, and this gang was ruthless towards anyone that tried to steal it. A few tried and got caught. Their mutilated bodies were left on the beach as a warning to anyone else that might consider it. The other possibility was the George Street Gang, Belize's most notorious organized crime gang. There were connections to this crew within my security group and indeed connections to the highest levels of the Belizean government via the gang members. Either in combination or separately, they tried to trap me on a couple of occasions, in one instance by sending a girl, also called Amy, to my house as bait, and on another by sending art, which they also knew I liked. Me, this really is like a movie. What did you think was going to happen? John McAfee. I wasn't sure what was going to go down, but whatever it was, I knew that it wasn't going to end in some movie-style gunfight on the beach in San Pedro. That much was for sure. We were all heavily armed. To engage in that kind of fiasco would have drawn far too much attention, and furthermore, they knew that all the people who were working for me were crazed ex-cons anyway. These guys had been in jail, some of them several times. They'd have fought because they had nothing to lose. There was no way they were going back to jail. Instead, I feared something more insidious and subtle might be being planned, some complicated set of circumstances that would allow them to frame me with something and then quietly bring me in. I must warn you, though, we are reaching a part of this story where I must be careful. Me? Why is that? John McAfee? Most of the people I'm going to talk about are still alive and still living in Belize. Not only that, but some of them are still known to be my friends. So I'm not going to be as forthright about certain things as I have been with you, my friend, and I just want you to understand why that is. Me? It feels like it isn't a coincidence that as we approach the part of the story where your next-door neighbour gets killed, you are now telling me you can't be forthright. What would you think if you were in my position? John McAfee? I am not going to lie to you. I never have. But by saying too much about something, I could be putting people at risk. When I left Belize, everyone I'd been associated with got pulled in by the police, including my good friend Eddie Ancona, who spent 6 weeks in Haitiville, one of the worst prisons on earth. They killed my boat captain, various other people that I'm about to talk about got seriously harassed or jailed, or in some cases both. So if I do much more by way of outing people, I could do serious damage. That's all I'm saying. If it was just me that was at risk, that would be fine. I'm on the run anyway, so I don't give a shit. But it's not just me, and I accept that none of this material is standard material for a book like this. Hitmen, corrupt government officials, prostitutes, and violent gang culture. But believe me, this really was the world I found myself in during those last months in that country. The wrong word from me really could get people killed in a place like Belize. That said, anything I do say to you, you may write. Me? Speaking of getting killed, what was the background between you and Gregory Fowle? John McAfee? People said that my neighbour, Gregory Fowle, and I were enemies, but the reality was that I hadn't spoken more than 50 words to the man in 5 years. He had retired down there, his father visited from time to time, and he was just nice and frankly unremarkable. When I brought my dogs back from the jungle, I won't lie, they did bark a lot. I admit they made a lot of noise. He complained, but so did everyone else in the 15 or so houses that were nearby on the shore. He certainly did not stand out in any way, shape or form as someone who was aggrieved more than anyone else. However, my dogs were poisoned one Friday night. The British Royal Marine I'd employed as my head of security because I was tired of dealing with lying Belizeans woke me early in the morning and told me that something had happened outside. I grabbed my gun, went out, and all the dogs were lying, whimpering in agony, with their guts spewing out of their mouths and asses. I had to shoot them all in the head there and then. One of them was Amy's, the girl who'd tried to kill me several times. As I shot it, it was looking up at me with a face that said, "I'm glad you're here." The guards took them and had them buried. Me, when you found the dogs, what did you think was going on? John McAfee. Well, it further confirmed what I'd been feeling in the weeks since I'd returned from the jungle, that something serious was afoot. This was the beginning of the assault. They were creating a situation whereby the police could just walk in with an arrest warrant and collect me in broad daylight. If that had happened, such as the corruption within that country, I'd either still be there now, or I'd be lying dead in a ditch somewhere. But I had no clue who had poisoned my dogs. Gregory Fowle certainly wouldn't have. He had dogs of his own. What man who had dogs would poison someone else's? And then 24 hours later, when Gregory Fowle was found dead, I knew what was coming down. I knew. Me, I have to ask, did you have anything to do with his death? John McAfee, I am many things, but stupid isn't one of them. How stupid would I have had to have been to do such a thing given my circumstances? Please, God. Me, do you know who did? John McAfee, I always had my suspicions, but that's all I'm prepared to say. Me, what happened next? Why did you ultimately flee? John McAfee, by this point I knew beyond doubt I was being framed. I also knew I'd get no justice in a country like Belize if I was captured. I couldn't just run initially because that's what they expected me to do. At that point I had no means of getting off the island by boat, road or air. So I did what anyone would do. I sat tight at home and waited for the next move. And I didn't have to wait for long. At 9 o'clock the next morning, a boat containing 15 members of the Belize police force docked not outside my house, but further down the beach. From there, I saw them walking in single file and with purpose up the beach towards my house. Instead of panicking, I calmly walked into my master bedroom, walked into my safe room, closed two doors, one of them solid steel, behind me, and climbed into an invisible attic recess above the closet via a pull-down ladder. There I lay silently on a piece of plywood for 18 hours while the police turned my house upside down. Me, were you afraid at this point? John McAfee, no, I was in self-preservation mode. I knew what had to be done, I just had to wait. Well, I could hear the police walking around in the house below me. It wasn't comfortable. Next time I do this, I must remember to leave a mattress and some water. By that evening, I could hear no sound, either on the property or outside. So I silently came down from the attic, slipped out the back door of my bedroom, sneaked as quietly as I could to my other neighbor's house, and let myself in through a side door. While they weren't in the country, they left a key with me to look after their property, which I did out of kindness. From here, I called Samantha and told her to put a plan in place in conjunction with a taxi driver. We had to get to Belize City. As I said, we couldn't risk running. Instead, we'd be hiding in plain sight.